Okay, good afternoon. Let's get started with Parshas Toldos. So, at the beginning of Parshas Toldos, we read, Ve'ela Toldos Yitzchak ben Abraham, Abraham Holides Yitzchak. We read about the fact that this is the story of Yitzchak, the son of Abraham, that Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak. And Rashi asks the question as to why is it that we have to restate the obvious. And Rashi explains that the clarification was necessary because of the late Tzanei Hador, the sarcastic clowns of the generation, who would mock Avram and Sarah and say that Yitzchak was the result of the fact that Sarah was pregnant from Abimelech, me Abimelech nesabra Sarah. And so therefore God had to intervene and change Yitzchak's face to appear almost exactly as Avram Avinu's, so that there would be no doubt as to who the child's father was. Rav Shtaiman Shalita seems puzzled as to why Hashem would even bother to pay attention to people who are just leitzanim, to people who are clowns. It sounds so not like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he answers that although generally the general policy is not to answer every single fool who has a comment to make, no matter how crazy the comment is, this time it was necessary. The fact of the matter is that since Avram Avinu inspired Emunah into people, and this series of rumors could have detrimental effects on what the people believed in, who the people chose to side in. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that for that, he felt it was his responsibility to respond. We find a similar thing by David HaMelech, by the way, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened to make Kilav ben Avigail v'David look exactly like David HaMelech in order to make sure that there be no challenge to the fact that David HaMelech was the paternal, the source of paternity for Kilav and not Navos. And then we read about how the fact that the children fought within Rivka, by Yisroel Tzitzu Abanim Bekirba, Vatomer and Cain, Lamaza Anochi. And she said, if that's going to be the case, then why am I here? And Rashi cites a Midrash that notes that each time she passed a Beis Avodah Zarah, or she passed the Yeshiva, Beis Hashem, she felt the baby trying to jump out. And she worried about the disparate interests of the child, and in desperation went Lidroshas Hashem to ask Shem ben Noach. But yet, Shem ben Noach comes and tells her, oh, you're having twins, one's going to be good and one's going to be rotten. And she doesn't all of a sudden start to worry, what's she going to do with a rotten kid? How come? Why was she still able to be calm after that point in time? So Rav Shlomo Volba explains that although knowing a child will be born with a difficult nature is a tough challenge, a child who's confused and drawn to multiple opposing directions in life is an even greater challenge because it makes it more difficult for him or her to set a course and make choices for her future. Rivka noted that she already saw in utero that the child was going to be opposingly directed. How was she going to be able to raise him and educate him properly? What positive methods was she going to be able to employ to make sure that this child would also be a source of pride to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to the Jewish nation? A child who she knows is heading in a certain path, the family can already start preparing for that particular path in order to be able to even utilize that path for the benefit of the Jewish people. Vayigdalu ha-ne'arim, seizing on that theme, we see the children going up. And the Torah tells us, Vayihi Esav ish yodei atzayed, ish sadeh, we see that Esav was a hunter, a man of the field. The late great Chevron Yerush Yeshiva of Simcha Zissel, Brody, the author of the wonderful series of Sarim, the Samdarech, explains that in life, we're all given different talents. And our job with those talents is to use them in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We just need to recognize how we can find HaKadosh Baruch Hu in each of these paths. So like the late Professor Herman Braunhofer once noted, he couldn't understand how a biologist doesn't appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu just from the study of the human body, or how a physicist can't study the laws of physics and recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Similarly, Yitzchak thought that that was going to be the case with Esav. Esav was going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the fact that he had a special yediyah, he had a special awareness of hunting. That's why the Torah comes back and reminds us that he was not only a person who had a yediyah of hunting, he was ish sadeh. All he knew all he spoke about, all he cared about, was hunting. His entire essence was the field. There was nothing more, no further interest, and no desire to utilize it for a higher purpose of serving the glory of Hashem. Later we read about the deal between Esav and Yaakov, where Esav turns around and he makes the declaration that Haliteni Namin Ha'adom Ha'adom Hazeh. And the Gemara in Bava Basra castigates Esav, highlighting all the different averos that he did on that day. It also highlights his inability to even ask for food by its name, but rather he was such a glutton that he refers to it as Ha'adom Ha'adom, not as lentils. And Rav Yosef Carmel Shalita comes along, the Rosh Kolol of Kolol Eretz Chemda, and he says, why should there be such negativity about a man who remembered to say the word please? Remember, he says, Haliteni na. But Rav Carmel explains that in Hebrew there are two definitions of the word na. Na can either refer to the word please, or it can refer to the status of now, like right now. Or raw, like al tochlumi menuna, don't eat the carbon pesach raw. When lentils are raw, they're red, says Rav Carmel. When cooked properly, they turn green. And that's what the Torah's hint is towards Esav's intent with the word na. Esav didn't mean it nicely and diplomatically, please let me have some of those lentils. He said, give me lentils, haliteni. All I want is lentils, and I want it na. I want it right now. And thus he was deserving, of course, of the negative castigations of Chazal. Later we read about Esav's wives. And right before, the Torah identifies who the wives were. In our parasha, they're referred to as Yehudit Bas Be'eri and Basmas Bas Elon Hachivi. But later in Parshas Vayishlach, we meet the same two women, and they're referred to as Ada Bas Elon and Ahaliva Bas Ana Bas Tzivon. And how could it be that their names changed so dramatically from Yehudit to Ada, from Basmas, from the word Besamim, to Ahaliva? Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shalita highlights that Esav saw that they weren't actually making it out so well with the in-laws. And Esav thought, gee, maybe the problem exists between Yitzchak and Rivka and my two wives because of their names. And quite honestly, if they would just simply fake it, change their names, highlight the fact that they were changing who they were trying to be, then maybe the relationship would be improved. And so therefore, Esav changed their names. Look, she's Yehudit. Look, she smells good. She's Basmas. But the fact of the matter is, a change of a name, a change of an exterior, doesn't really mean too much if it doesn't include a change in the tchuna, in the nature of the individual. Later we read about the trickery that was necessary in order for Yaakov to secure the brachos. You know, there's a Yerushalmi in the Nedarim that notes that according to Rav Acha b'shem Rav Chona, Esav is going to dress himself up la'asid lavo and wrap himself in a talus. And he will go and sit with the tzaddikim in Gan Eden. And he'll be able to sit there until HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes along and excises him from this situation. Rabbi Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi Shalita comes along and asks, how will Esav be able to get that far with the tzaddikim? How come it's going to require Hashem to kick him out of Gan Eden? Why are the tzaddikim allowing this terrible, evil Esav to be able to sit with them? Rav Ezrachi answers that Yaakov is not the only one who's capable of employing trickery and putting on a disguise. Rather, the difference is that Yaakov can put on a disguise and look like Esav. It's still Hakol Kol Yaakov. The internal part is always still going to be Yaakov. Esav, on the other hand, can look like Yaakov, but once he's going to look like Yaakov and be around Yaakov, it's going to have an effect on him, at least enough to get him into Gan Eden. However, Hashem is able to see past disguises, and ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to likely punish Esav by kicking him out of Gan Eden and forcing him to go to a different place, a place that's more fitting of who he was. After the end of the process and Yaakov gets the bracha, Esav comes in and tries to get a bracha himself. And when Yitzchak becomes aware of what had happened, he tells Esav, somebody else came and took the bracha. And Esav turns to him and he says, HaBracha achas hi lecha avi. Don't you have another bracha? Barcheni gam ani avi. Give me a bracha as well. But the bracha shouldn't be, the request shouldn't have been HaBracha achas. It should be HaBracha acheres. There should, don't you have another bracha? What did Esav really mean when he turns around and he says, HaBracha achas hi lecha avi? Marino Rav Shechter Shalita once pointed out to us that one can't assume for a moment that Yitzchak was mistaken and intended to give Esav the real brachos. Yitzchak never intended on giving the real brachos to Esav. After all, one of the aspects of the brachos is about Kedusha Sa'aretz. And you can't give rulership over Kedusha Sa'aretz to a person who doesn't even recognize Kedusha. Rather, says Rav Shechter, Esav was destined to receive the bracha on Ashirus u'Mosaros, on financial success, on the opportunity to live the comfortable life. And when Yaakov received the bracha even on that, Esav wanted something in revenge, he wanted something in return. There was still a bracha achas, a bracha that was not compared to any of the other brachos that were received, the bracha of Avram Avinu. And so Esav turns to Yitzchak and says, HaBracha achas hi lecha avi. You still have one bracha left, the bracha of Avram Avinu. Give that one to me. Barcheni gamani. Give me that bracha also. Yitzchak responds, Hein gevir samtiv lach. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should also give you mital ha-shamayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should also give you the opportunity to be successful. He should give you the bracha of wealth as well. Because a bracha on wealth can be shared, a bracha on financial security can be shared. We have plenty of room in Judaism for those who are financially secure. We have plenty of room in the world for brachos, for those to be successful. But Birkas Avram was to be reserved for the one who deserved it. And the one who deserved it was none other than Yaakov Avinu. Finally, this Shabbos we read a special Haftorah in the fact that Sunday is going to be Rosh Chodesh Kislev. And so we will read the Haftorah of Machar Chodesh, the Haftorah that highlights the fact that the next day is going to be Rosh Chodesh. Soloveitchik once asked the question and asked, why is it that we have a special Haftorah for the day before Rosh Chodesh? When Yontif comes out on the day after Shabbos, we don't have a Haftorah for Machar Yontif. Why have a special one for Machar Chodesh? And Rav Soloveitchik explained that there are very, very fine similarities between the moon and the Jewish people. Just like the moon, who right after it hits its nadir, begins a rapid ascent towards a new beginning, the Jewish people can take solace in their darkest moments, when the worlds and the light seems to have extinguished down to the tiniest of the shadows and twinkles. To note, Machar Chodesh, tomorrow there is a new dawn. Tomorrow, Chadash. Tomorrow it will be new. There's a new day and a new dawn. A dawn that will lead to a Yom Shekulo Aroch. May we all spiritually merit to get there. B'mhera v'yameinu. A good Shabbos, and also a Chodesh Tov Umvorach.